So here we are. Welcome to the Talking Information Center. My name is Rod, and we are reading the Patriot Ledger on this Thursday. It's August the 20th, 2026, on this Thursday. And on the front page of the Patriot Ledger today is this big story, and it's something that everyone on the South Shore looks forward to this time of the year. What's new at this year at the Marshfield Fair? Fun flavors and patriotic contests abound. So here we go, as we read here from the Patriot Ledger. When visitors walk through the Marshfield Fair gates starting Friday, August 21st, they'll find the classic fair foods, but there are also a few new options this year to get people's mouths watering. The fair, pardon me, is trying to balance all of the traditional food fairgoers expect to eat, like fried dough and lemonades, with new offerings, because visitors' tastes keep changing, said Noel Powers, who organizing the concessions for the fair. The food scene is ever-changing, and there is always new trends, Powers said. One of the options includes Tang Hulu, a trendy Chinese snack with skewers of fresh fruit like strawberries, grapes, or orange slices coated in a sugar shell. The fair will also feature a variety of new food trucks serving up Mexican food, barbecue, Korean-style street food, Chinese food, and wood-fired pizza, Powers said. The fair also wants to offer healthy options because they want to make sure they cater to everyone's tastes and needs. When you think of fair foods, you don't always think about the healthiest things, Powers said. But we do try to have a couple vendors there that offer some healthier alternatives because there are a lot of health-conscious people now. There is also a second year the fair has partnered with Castle Island Brewing to create a custom beer for the fair. Last year's beer was called Fair Game in honor of the fair as a whole. This year, the beer is a golden lager called The Last Race, an ode to the fair's horse racing history after races stopped in the early 1990s, Powers said. As they switch up the theme and name for the beer each year, Powers said he hopes it becomes a collectible that fairgoers want to check out each year. Besides new tasty treats, the fair will also feature new contests, all based around celebrating America's semi-quincessential 250th anniversary, said Janet Scribner, who handles the fair's public relations. The different contests range from a 4-H poster contest with the theme of animals in American history to a patriotic scarecrow decorating contest they are calling the Scary Quinn Centennial, plus cooking contests for American pie and cookout foods, a photography contest depicting America the Beautiful, and much more, according to the fair's exhibitor handbook. The full list of patriotic contests can be found in the handbook. The Marshfield Fair begins Friday, August 21st, and runs through Sunday, August 30th, from noon to 10 p.m. daily at the Marshfield Fairgrounds on Route 3A. Admission to the fair is $15 and free for children ages 6 and younger. Pre-sale tickets are available for $12 until 11:59 p.m. August 20th online at marshfield.fiestashows.com by calling 781-834-6629 or at the administration office until 5 p.m. A mega pass, which includes admission and an unlimited mechanical ride wristband, is $45 in advance and $60 starting August 21st. It can be used for any one day of the fair. For more information on free and discounted tickets, click on that little site there in the Patriot Ledger, which we can't do because We're on a computer. So a fair worker rides past a milk exhibit. That's the picture that they have on the front page of the Patriot Ledger, where they're getting ready and putting a ride together, a picture of workers putting that ride together at the Marshfield Fair. And this is the Patriot Ledger from the Talking Information Center, 20th day of August. Now we read this story. Cape Cod whale connection fuels man's ride for science. For nearly 50 years, Vincent James has carried a dream with him. In 1976, when he was 15 years old, he discovered maps for Bike Centennial, a cross-country cycling route created during the nation's bicentennial. The route stretched from Portland, Oregon to Portland, Maine, and he immediately imagined himself riding it. "I said to myself, I want to do this," he said. 5 decades later, he is finally making that dream a reality, with a mission inspired by another lifelong connection. On August 13th, James, a New Jersey resident, with a home in Truro, began a 4,000-mile bicycle journey across the country to raise money for the Center for the Coastal Studies in Provincetown. The goal is to raise $50,000 for the organization as he rides from Portland, Oregon, where he will dip his back tire in the Pacific Ocean, to Portland, Maine, where he will dip his front tire in the Atlantic Ocean, and finally to Provincetown. In all 50 days or early all in 50 days or early October. 50 is a big number, he said. It's 50 years for me since the cross-country dream began. It's the 50-year anniversary for the Center for the Coastal Studies, and we're trying to raise $50,000. His connection to the organization began decades ago through his summers on Cape Cod when he was in his 30s and visited with his family. "We've been going up to the Cape since 1992, James said. "My parents had a timeshare in Brewster. Every summer, without fail, we would go and we would do the whale watch trips out of Provincetown." Those trips introduced him to the work of the center's scientists and to the whales that return each year to the waters off Cape Cod over the years. His appreciation for the organization grew into something deeper. A belief in the importance of protecting the ocean and the species that depend on it. "It seems natural," he said, "of choosing the Center for Coastal Studies as the beneficiary of his ride. They do such a wonderful job, not only with the whales and whale disentanglement, but the conservation aspect, and really doing, as they say, science that matters. The center's work with critically endangered North Atlantic right whales is especially meaningful to him. He previously lived in South America while working for Nabisco and saw southern right whales in Patagonia. But the challenges facing North Atlantic right whales made the Provincetown scientists' research and conservation efforts stand out." "It's vital work," James said. Center for Coastal Studies Executive Director Anne-Marie Runfola said the organization has had many generous donors and volunteers who help make the work possible, but no one has ever offered to ride a bicycle 4,000 miles across the country to support us. In addition to raising critical funds for the center, Vincent's effort shows a passion for our organization that inspires our community. And it inspires us, too, she said. The Coast to Coast for Coastal Studies ride is all the more valuable, she added, because it shines a light on our 50th anniversary this year and what we have achieved with our communities to protect our ocean and coasts for the benefit of all of us. James's hope is also that the ride will do more than raise money. He wants to start conversations about the importance of ocean health, including in communities more than 1,000 miles from the coast. "People who live in landlocked states need to understand why ocean health matters to them, too," James said. "The oceans influence systems that affect the health of the entire planet," he said, adding, If we don't have healthy oceans and a healthy environment, I mean, it affects everything. We're all interconnected. The ride additionally represents the fulfillment of a promise Jane made to himself as a teenager. He said life repeatedly pushed the journey aside. After high school, he traveled to Europe. After college, he went to China to teach English. Later, when he and his wife were 30, they bought bicycles and prepared to finally make the ride, but a career opportunity changed those plans. Now, at 65, James decided he can no longer wait. "If I don't do it this year, I'm never going to do it," he said. In preparation over the past 18 months, James has logged more than 4,000 miles on his bicycle, the same distance he will cover during the trip. He gradually built his endurance, moving from shorter rides to longer distances, eventually completing 3 consecutive 100-mile rides and a 7.5-hour ride covering 110 miles. "Once you've proved to yourself that you can do it, then the mental outlook is different," James said. "It's not going to be easy for sure, but it's going to be manageable." As of August 11th, the campaign raised $21,960 toward the $50,000 goal. The supported ride is through Trek Travel, and it includes 24 other cyclists traveling for their own causes. Riders will stay in hotels each night, while support vehicles transport their gear. The route will include major physical challenges, including Bighorn Pass in Wyoming, where riders will climb an 11-mile stretch with grades reaching 17% and a 126-mile day in Minnesota. Supporters can follow James's journey on the Center for Coastal Studies Facebook and Instagram. He plans to share regular updates from the road, along with photos, experiences, and facts about the center's work and ocean conservation efforts. Those who would like to support James's ride can contribute through the center's Coast to Coast for Coastal Studies campaign. And you can do that online at https://getinvolved/special-events/coast-to-coast-for-coastal-studies. Heather McCarran writes about whales, sharks, and other marine and wildlife, Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, environmental issues, offshore wind, and issues in Barnstable, Falmouth, and Brewster, and she was the author of that particular story that is in the Patriot Ledger on this Thursday, August the 20th, 2026, from the Talking Information Center. And back to the front page of the Patriot Ledger today, legal expert. "No way," Clancy testifies. This story is written by Maria DeVito of the Patriot Ledger and USA Today Network. As the prosecution rests in the Lindsey Clancy murder trial and Clancy's defense attorney, Kevin Reddington, starts calling witnesses, questions remain for some over whether Clancy herself will testify. Clancy, 36, is facing murder charges in the January 24, 2023 strangulation deaths of her 3 children, Cora, 5, Dawson, 3, and Callan, 8 months, in the basement of the family's Duxbury home. She has pleaded not guilty to all 3 counts. Reddington admits Clancy strangled her children with exercise bands, but has portrayed her as a devoted mother, desperately seeking help for worsening postpartum symptoms, who was misdiagnosed and overmedicated before she suffered a psychotic break when she killed the children before attempting suicide. The prosecution argues Clancy acted deliberately and rationally when she killed the children. But don't expect Reddington to call Clancy to the stand, legal analyst and author Margaret McLean, a former Essex County prosecutor and Boston College law professor, told the Patriot Ledger August 17th. "Calling Clancy to the stand would be too risky," she said. "No way," McLean said. McLean hosts the Margaret McLean Show on YouTube, as well as the weekly It's a Crime podcast. Both shows break down high-profile cases from an insider's perspective. McLean is providing daily coverage of the Clancy trial. McLean said Reddington will almost certainly advise Clancy to continue exercising her Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. In my opinion, she is likely not going to testify in her own defense because I also think it would expose her to devastating cross-examination by the prosecution, McLean said. If Clancy were to take the stand, McLean said, Assistant District Attorney Jennifer Sprague and Shannon Buckingham would be able to aggressively cross-examine her about various actions she took the day of the killings, such as why she sent her husband, Patrick Clancy, to CVS for medicine and to pick up dinner and looking up the driving time between the Clancy house and the 3V restaurant in Plymouth. McLean said prosecutors would also question Clancy about her internal searches for symptoms of postpartum psychosis days prior to the killings, and that a digital intelligence specialist testified to on August 17th in an attempt to make her appear rational and calculating to the jury. The cross-examination would be another grueling step in a trial where Clancy has already openly wept in court multiple times. She's so emotional, I think she'd really have a hard time on the stand, McLean said. McLean said the only reason to put Clancy on the stand would be so she could testify how she heard voices telling her to kill her children, but McLean said the cons of her testimony far outweigh any pros. I think it would be a huge mistake to put her on the stand because they could rip her apart, she said. And Reddington doesn't need Clancy's personal testimony, McLean said, because he can get the same information from her medical records. Reddington will likely call an independent forensic psychiatrist and other medical experts who have met with Clancy, and they can talk about Clancy's health records, her multiple prescribed medications, and her mental state, McLean said. Clancy was not called by the prosecution because she previously invoked her Fifth Amendment right to remain silent, McLean said, meaning prosecutors legally couldn't call her to the stand. Once you exercise that right, the police can't interview you anymore, and you have the right to remain silent. So it's up to the government to prove the case, she said. And let's talk a little bit about the author of this story. Maria DeVito covers growth and development for the Patriot Ledger. Aha, very, very good. Okay, now let's go back to other stories that are in the Patriot Ledger on this Thursday. It's the 20th day of August from the Talking Information Center. Minnesota sues over ICE officer extraction refusal. Minnesota and Texas Governor Greg Abbott on August 18th for refusing to extradite a federal immigration agent facing assault charges for shooting a Venezuelan man in the leg in Minneapolis during last winter's deportation surge. Christian Castro, an immigration and customs enforcement officer, has been in a Texas county jail near the United States-Mexico border since Texas Rangers arrested him on May 29th on a warrant issued by a Minnesota judge. Castro is wanted in Minnesota to face charges for wounding Julio Cesar Sosa Celis on January 14th at the height of President Donald Trump's deportation campaign in Minnesota, which drew weeks of protests. The case highlights the partisan divide over Trump's immigration policies. Abbott, a Republican, has been a vocal supporter of Trump's deportation efforts. Minnesota's Democratic leaders, including Governor Tim Walz, have condemned Trump's surge of armed ICE patrols in Minneapolis and other cities, during which immigration officers killed two American citizens in January. The U.S. Constitution and federal law requires states to extradite people wanted for crimes in another state, but Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, who filed the lawsuit, said Abbott was refusing to honor the extradition request sent by Walz in June, knowing that under Texas law, Castro must be released from jail after 90 days, which would elapse next week if Abbott has not signed the rendition warrant. Later on August 18th, Abbott said he was not signing Minnesota's rendition warrant because he mistrusted wall's policies. Okay, so we are reading from the Patriot Ledger on this, what is today? Oh, it's Thursday. It's the 20th day of August, and this is the Talking Information Center in the Patriot Ledger. Here's an interesting story for you. What's the best high school in Massachusetts? Was it yours? Let's find out. When it comes to the best high school in the country, Massachusetts is still at the top of the list. The annual U.S. News and World Report Best High Schools rankings for 2026-27 found that Massachusetts leads the nation in education. Massachusetts continues to lead the nation with 47% of its high schools ranked in the top quarter of U.S. high schools. It is followed by New Jersey with 44% and Maryland with 43%, the rankings found. This year's list evaluated at about 27,000 public high schools with 18,000 ranked. To make the determination, six metrics were considered, including results on state-required assessments, graduation rates, college readiness measures. Schools are evaluated on how effectively they serve all students, including underserved populations, with college readiness specifically measured through the student participation and performance on advanced placement and international baccalaureate exams, the U.S. News and World Report said. The top-ranked high school in the state is Boston Latin School, which came in number 44 in the overall national rankings. It's an improvement for Boston Latin, which ranked number 46 in last year's rankings. Boston Latin School, which is also America's oldest school, has a 99% graduation rate and a 100% of students took at least one AP test. For college readiness, it ranked number 60 in the country. Boston Latin has consistently ranked high in U.S. News and World Report rankings. The overall top 10 schools in the Bay State were Boston Latin School in Boston, number 44 national. Number 2 was Belmont High School in Belmont, number 138 nationally. Pioneer Valley Chinese Immersion Charter School in Hadley was ranked number 139 nationally. Number 4 in Massachusetts, the Bromfield School in Harvard, number 161 nationally. Number 5, Lexington High School in Lexington, number 167 nationally. Number 6, Mystic Valley Regional Charter School in Malden, number 169 nationally. Number 7 in Massachusetts, O'Brien School of Math and Science in Roxbury, number 206 nationally. Number 8, Hopkinton High School in Hopkinton, number 216 nationally. Number 9 was Sturgis Charter Public School in Hyannis, which came in 252 nationally. And finally, number 10 in Massachusetts, Dover Sherburn Regional High School in Dover, which was ranked number 262 nationally. So that's what you have there in the Patriot Ledger as to the top school in Massachusetts here. So let's see what other stories are in the Patriot Ledger today. And I'm trying to scroll down here and find there was some sports that was in the section here. So Europe's heat. Okay, let's read this story. Europe's heat wave are exposing insurance gap, it says. High temperatures not so often covered for firms. This story is from Reuters. Dateline is London. It's in the Patriot Ledger. For more than a century, cafes in the Italian city of Padua have welcomed customers for an early evening drink or aperitivo, encouraging them to sit outside and socialize before dinner. As Europe bakes under its fifth heat wave of the year, the traditional 6 to 7 p.m. slot has all but disappeared as people seek air conditioning indoors, cutting sales for many hospitality businesses. Adding to the pressure, extreme heat often falls outside traditional business interruption insurance, exposing a growing protection gap for companies all across Europe. Moody's has published estimates that last summer's European heat waves cost $50 billion in lost economic output while generating only about $580 million of insured payouts. In Padua, aperitivo often now starts later, which means that the outdoor seating areas, the terraces, the spaces outside, are left unused and empty, said Federica Luni, president of Hospitality Association APPE Padova. According to a survey of about 600 hospitality businesses in the city and its province, more than 80% reported turnover declines of around 20% during the recent heat wave. A 20% decline wipes out your margin, Looney said. Heat waves are increasingly taking a toll on Europe's economy, reducing productivity, curbing consumer spending, and raising operating costs. For insurers, such losses can be difficult to cover because they often stem from indirect operational disruption rather than property damage. Heat in itself is not a traditionally insured risk, said Swenji Serminski, managing director for climate and sustainability in Marsh. Extreme heat rarely causes catastrophic physical damage the way a flood or storm does, but the financial operational disruption that it triggers can be just as severe. So that is the reading from the Patriot Ledger here at the Talking Information Center on August the 20th. Thank you for listening.